Good evening, everyone. Can you hear me? This evening, I wanted to talk about something I have been dwelling on the last couple of weeks. My name is Ryoshin. I'm a senior student here at the Village Zendo, and the thing that I've been contemplating is living with uncertainty. And I actually read an article just this past weekend in the New York Times, and it was about teen smartphone use, and it was written by a psychology professor, I think from Hunter. And she was addressing hypothesis that our brains are being changed by the fact that we have our noses on our phones all the time. And there's sort of a received wisdom that since this is a situation which is even more true for teenagers, that perhaps this was the cause of a lot of the anxiety that teens today are experiencing. She asserts that actually that the smartphone use is not the cause of the increase in anxiety that's recorded among teenagers. It's actually the effect. That the real reason is that they're living in a world right now which is very uncertain. And although they are not yet adults responsible for living on their own in that world, that's not that far away for them, and they're very, very keenly aware of how uncertain their lives actually are and will be. And that the smartphone use is actually an escape from this anxiety. It's an escape from this uncertainty. It's the thing to kind of take them away from it. I don't know whether this is true or not in the case of smartphone use, but I know a teenager, a 16-year-old woman, and not that long ago, she confided in me that she has a lot of anxiety. And this is someone who's actually very, very bright, pretty, from a good family. In my humble opinion, she has lots of potential. And I knew she has a whole slew of emotions that are not at all atypical with being a teenager, with just being that age. Anger at her parents, anger at her brother. But I was really, really surprised that this clever, witty young woman who fits right in with an adult conversation feels such deep anxiety. It really surprised me. And so that piece of data, I think, informed my reading of this article recently. And to top it all off, it was, a week in which I myself was feeling very insecure. I grew up dealing with feelings of insecurity, and so it's a very familiar feeling. And so I just thought about, what it must be like growing up as a teenager in this world today. Their economic future is uncertain. We actually live in a world right now where truth is uncertain. We live in a time where what tribe we belong to strongly colors our perception of reality. And so we see all of this vitriol, all of this anger among camps of people who believe in alternative facts. I'm not a historian. Perhaps this was always true. But I have to say that for me myself, what I see in the world right now is deeply, deeply disturbing. And I don't I guess I don't see a way out of it. And so And, you know, I've been around the block a few times. For someone who's just approaching adulthood to see what's going on, to just start opening one's eyes to the world and to see how messed up our public discourse is, has to be deeply, deeply disturbing. Our social structures and faith in institutions, I would have to say, have radically changed in the last decade. Our sense of community, people don't go to church anymore, families are distributed, and so there is much less of a sense of a family than perhaps there once was for many, many people. And of course, there's also the uncertainty of life itself. The impact that we all feel every week when it's 95 degrees in the summer of climate change. The knowledge that we have, either deeply or just superficially, of the risk of cyber threats to the infrastructure that powers the electricity that's keeping the lights on, or that brings the keeps the water pumps going that bring water to our homes. And perhaps actually, in the midst of it all, a loss of faith in ourselves, in our ability to actually have any influence in the midst of all this uncertainty. So that's a pretty grim picture. Sorry about that. it's just, you know, this was the chain of thought that I was thinking about what it must be to be growing up right now in this world as it is. And I don't have to mention Trump's name to frighten you, or to frighten myself at least. And yet, the Buddha teaches that uncertainty is at the core of our existence, no more now than it ever was. And I can go through a similar litany of, you know, of facts that to explain how uncertain life must have been 100 years ago, or 200 years ago, or 2,500 years ago. Even 100 years ago, before the invention of antibiotics, if you got an infection, you probably died. A very, very good chance you died. Women 100 years ago had very few legal rights. If you go back a little further, people of color in this country were slaves. So things have changed for the better, but it's always, life has always been uncertain, and that is what the Buddha says. Change is guaranteed. We get sick and we die. Loved ones get sick and pass away. Jobs end. Change happens. And so I feel the teachings are as relevant to our life and times as they ever were, perhaps more so. And the individual journey of practice, of waking up to life in each moment, allows us to meet each moment without fear. Now, how can we meet each moment without fear? Well, we chant the Heart Sutra, and we say, when we chant, form is emptiness, emptiness is form. And a little further on, and thus the Bodhisattva lives prajna paramita, with no hindrance in the mind, no hindrance, and therefore no fear. So The fourfold noble truths teach us that a large part of our challenge, our difficulty in dealing with the inevitable change that occurs in our lives, is that we cling to our sense of self. We cling to the way that we want things to be, and we resist change into things that may not be as we want them to be. We have difficulty accepting the fact that we are not in control. And so we try to control. We try to cling. We try to hold on to things. And we suffer. The times that we live in give rise to strong emotions. Fear, anxiety, insecurity, guilt. But paradoxically, in my experience with practice, by opening up to our difficult emotions, we find that they lose some of their power over us. We begin to understand how they work, to see through them. We begin to see that they're based on an illusion, which is our illusion of separateness. I read the message boards of people whose politics I disagree with. One of them recently shared a post about putting prayer back in schools. And of course, this was a repost from some right-wing news source. But when somebody else engaged them, what they're interested in, actually, is schools that aren't filled with students that are using heroin. What they're looking for are schools that are like they remember school being in a simpler time. Is their solution too simplistic to bring prayer back to schools? Possibly. Do they sometimes respond with angry words rather than kind words? Yes. But we are not separate. Because what they want, and as this exchange revealed in their heart of hearts, is not very different from what I want, which is a kinder, better world. And so we can allow ourselves to amplify the separation with those that maybe express themselves in a different way. Or we can recognize our common humanity and get past the superficial differences and realize that we are not separate and try to find ways as individuals to make the world a better place. In thinking about this problem of a life of uncertainty, Frederick Buchner talks about Albert Camus' philosophy of the absurd, in which we allow our insatiable desire to make sense of our lives is juxtaposed with life's inexorable refusal to allow us to do so. This is not a new problem. It's not a problem that is unique to this time. Camus was writing about this decades ago. And paradoxically, I believe that this practice teaches us that by realizing the groundless nature of being, by giving up our ideas about things, by giving up our expectations about how things should be, and committing to simply accepting each moment as it comes, we find meaning. Our life becomes whole, despite the uncertainty. In the presence of the uncertainty, each moment as it comes, this moment, right now, the oak tree in the garden, 3 pounds of flax, the cold water in the cup, getting together with friends for dinner, or spending a quiet evening alone reading posts on Facebook. Whatever it is, we simply meet it and then let it go. Tomorrow is completely uncertain. Tomorrow is completely fresh. As the character Anne with an E says in one of my favorite Netflix series right now, tomorrow is always fresh with no mistakes in it yet. Haven't made any mistakes yet. It's completely fresh. So amidst all of this uncertainty, I have come to understand the importance of Maizumi Roshi's guidance. Appreciate your life. Appreciate your life. Appreciate the cold water in the cup. This life is ungraspable. We try to figure it out. Try to pin it down. But it's the ultimate koan, this koan of everyday life. It's actually quite comical, in a way, our tendencies, predilections, phobias, preferences, needs. We don't need to take ourselves so seriously. But we will. When we don't take ourselves seriously, it's actually easier to be generous with others. It's easier, perhaps, to ask a question that reveals the common ground rather than acting out and fighting back. It's easier to get up when we mess up. So how do we live with uncertainty? How do we face our anxiety? By getting out of bed. By washing our bowls. By saying a kind word. By noticing. By returning to this moment. I'll end with a poem that I found in a list of poems that Roshi shared at the a poetry workshop last year. It's a poem, a little short poem by Matsushita Suiko, or Suike. Cosmos in bloom, as if no war were taking place. Thank you.